Welcome to Dialogue, a program that explores the world of ideas and issues in national and international affairs, history, and culture. I'm George Liston, CA. As we come to the end of the 20th century, it's clear that the name of Sigmund Freud retains an almost iconic presence in modern cultural history. That his influence on Western society is profound is indisputable. That his legacy is also controversial cannot be denied. But even for his critics and antagonists, Sigmund Freud and Freudian theory remain powerful and present forces. The real question, of course, is why? Why did psychoanalysis gain such presence in our century? Why did these theories have such resonance for modern Western culture at a time of maximum danger? And why did Sigmund Freud develop his theories? My guest is Martin Wayne, author of Freud's Answer, The Social Origins of Our Psychoanalytic Century. Martin, welcome to Dialogue.
Thank you.
Martin, your book is a great help, and I must say a very accessible help, in setting the work of Sigmund Freud in historical context, and that's a good way to appreciate the impact it's had. Let me start there, as you did in the book, and ask you this question first. How essential is it for us to understand the world before the 19th century in terms of seeking the roots of what Freud would develop? I mean by that a world that, at least in human memory, seems to be hierarchical and secure and stable. Is that important and why?
Yes, it's essential. That world, with the characteristics that you just mentioned and several others, disappeared. And when a world disappears, it leaves a big gap in millions of consciousnesses. And it did that beginning in the 18th century and at the end of the 18th century with the French Revolution, and in the middle of the 18th century with the Industrial Revolution, there was a quickening and hurrying and taking this world out of existence.
One thing that seems to have come out of it is what we might call colorfully the birth of the individual. In other words, it seems to me, for the first time, human beings en masse are released as individual units to find their fate.
Exactly. That's what the revolutions were about. Mm-hmm. We had all been, in a sense, before corporate. Our corporations were families. They were baronies. They were royal dynasties. They were all familial. And all of a sudden, all of these were hacked apart. And what was left was each and every individual that had before been a component of these corporations. So when you say the birth of the individual, that's exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. And when this individual was born, he didn't know exactly who he was, what he was, or where he was.
Right.
He was, to some degree, lost.
And that's our condition today. I mean, we sort of come to lost indeed, but also thinking of ourselves as individuals. But I think your book reminds us of how terribly frightening freedom can be, especially when it's encountered for the first time, when all your moorings are ripped away.
No doubt.
And you're left on
exactly.
your own.
Exactly. No doubt.
Yeah. These are the preconditions for Freudian theory.
They were. Indeed they were. Indeed they were. Mm-hmm. Something, there were new elements that had to be woven to make a society that would now adhere and stick together after it had been dispersed. It had been hit by some kind of wrecking ball that created, to mix metaphors, a centrifugal force that sent everything flying in different directions. And now many people came up with ideas that we had to be knit together again. Mm-hmm. We had to be unified.
One more scene setter, if you will, Martin, before we move into Freud and his theories themselves. But throughout the period, maybe this deserves some emphasis of its own, throughout this latter half of the 19th century, there was, and here I quote you, a descent into hysteria. Hysteria is almost kind of a mass social disruption. Is that right? Give us a sense of what that really means.
Yeah, it was a kind of a mass disease. There is a social disease. The end of the 19th century is often called the fin de siècle. That was the name not just of the ending years of the century, but an atmosphere attitude and summary of what was going on. What was going on is that the European nations were preparing to go to war. They were preparing to go to war practically every day and every week. Germany threatened Russia, and Russia threatened England, and they were all threatening each other, and they were doing it all the time.
Right.
In the context of these war threats and these international threats, internally in the countries, the workers were trying to unionize, and they threatened the industrialists. The industrialists threatened to stage coup d'etats so that they could put down the workers. Mm-hmm. The masses of people lived in poverty much more than anything we know today. They were uneasy. They were filled with anxiety. Mm-hmm. They didn't know where their next job or their next meal or their next anything would come from.
Well, in addition to that, and you described it very well, I'm also struck by the rampant pathologies that were at play. I mean, it was anti-Semitism was rife. This belief in violence the theories of violence advanced by otherwise reputable scholars. Extraordinary.
Right on point. What happened with all the trouble with this hysteria that we describe is that people with various political persuasions arose and said, we have answers for you. We have solutions. One group said, we have the answer for you. The Jews are doing all this. And if we promote anti-Semitism and maybe somehow get rid of the Jews, the whole world is going to be better. That was rank absolute nonsense, but they needed something to say. Other people said, you know what? What was really good was not this new world that happened after 1800, but the world that came before. So you know what we need? They said, we need kings. And these people were, of course, called neo-royalists, neo-monarchists. Mm-hmm. So they wanted the monarchy back. And the monarchy had not disappeared in that long a time. There were not many years intervening. So it was natural to fall back on it. There are other people who said, you know what? We don't like this whole structure that has arisen, these classes and all of this work and all of these rules and all of this discipline. We'll have something we'll call anarchism. And what we'll do is in all our factories, we'll have elections and we'll run our own factories and live our own lives and be free. So that was three of many kinds of political tendencies that expressed themselves, all of them inimical.
Exactly.
Socialism, communism, we didn't mention, Marxism.
And all of them vehement. I mean, really hard-driving.
They were. Their swords were out. Their cannon, their artillery was out. They were ready to go to war. They did go to social war in Vienna, where Freud was beginning to think about something he seemed to think was a psychology. They were the people were rampaging through the streets yelling death to the Jews. The mayor of Vienna at that time was an outspoken anti-Semite by the name of Karl Luega.
The so-called Handsome Karl.
Handsome Karl, yes,
whose
indeed.
Whose theories were quite ugly.
Yes, indeed, as ugly as they could be. His cohort was a guy by the name of Georg Schonerer, who was an original Hitler. He had most of the ideas that Hitler would, and Hitler came to Vienna at the turn of the century, 1906, 1907, and these people were active in Vienna at that time.
Absolutely.
So we can see how this world falling apart was subject to all of these attempts to put it back together. The ways they thought of putting it together were in many, many ways ugly, but the idea that it had to be put together, there was a good deal of truth to that.
Once again, Martin Wayne, you have set a magnificent stage. Now we're going to introduce our protagonist, our main character.
On the stage.
Sigmund Freud is going to enter stage right. Before he does that, though, let me take a moment to say that this is Dialogue, a presentation of the Woodrow Wilson Center. I'm George Liston, CA, and my guest is Martin Wayne, author of Freud's Answer, The Social Origins of Our Psychoanalytic Century, published by Ivan R.D. Press. Enter Sigmund Freud. Sigmund Freud, I don't think, was actually born in Vienna, but he came there as a very four-year-old, a young boy.
Right, exactly.
And, of course, this is where he grows up. Now, there's an enormous amount to be said about him that your book certainly does justice to. We can't do justice to in the brief time we have. But essentially, what does Freud do? I mean, what is he's confronted with all this turmoil and ugliness that we've just described. What's the essence of his genius? What kind of answers does he begin to propose to this?
Well, let me just give a touch of background to it. He enters a scene. Freud is a neurologist who decides to become a psychologist. He decides that the essential point of the mind and of mental conditions is not biology, but psychology. And he enters, therefore, into a strain of European psychology called soul psychology. Right. Soul psychology was the belief that, well, as the name implies, it comes from really a religious tradition, that we have a soul and it seems to get upset and maybe get sick, and the soul can be straightened out in some way by either finding out the secrets that the soul is maintaining or talking to the soul. Some way this soul can be managed. That was their theory. And there were thousands and thousands of soul psychologists, and Freud, casting about for a discipline with which to ally himself in psychology, elected to join the soul psychologists.
Right. And he considered himself, or was talked of as, a mind doctor in this way, that phrase.
Well, they were essentially mind doctors. Yes. Yeah. And they believed its conditions were almost totally psychological and not biological, even though the mind, which is resident presumably in the brain, is biological.
Right.
Well, there was a lot of confusion about this, and Freud and nobody else has ever cleared that up. It's certainly not cleared up today. I mean, this is so difficult a subject that it will go on.
Indeed, it will. One thing though that intrigues me about this phrase you've used, Martin, of soul doctor, is it obviously has a religious reference.
Yes, indeed.
And of course, in the preceding world, the world that was lost, religion had been the great solace for people. And I guess that's the question. And it's still an ongoing question, the effect of what Freud did on religion. I mean, let me pose it more colorfully. Is it that the Freudian theory, as he developed in his time, was seen as challenging religion, displacing religion, replacing religion? What's the relationship?
Freud was an atheist. And therefore,